Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. My name is Garrett Lill. I'm a certified financial planner and former advisor. And I started Advisor Advocates in this podcast to share with other advisors some of the experience that I like to say I accidentally accumulated over the course of my 13-year career, especially around the areas of the industry involving transitions from one firm to the other, advisor recruiting, M&A deals, things of that nature. Interesting thing for advisors that I've experienced in my career is that advisors are often on an island. We don't really know what's out there. We don't know what's going on outside the walls of our firm and outside the confines of our own practices. Especially when I was working in the recruiting industry and talking with advisors, there were just so many advisors who didn't know what they didn't know. So the purpose of this podcast and Advisor Advocates is to help bridge that information gap, to help advisors understand a little bit more about what the landscape looks like out there, what options are available to you, and sort of share some of the insights that I've ran into and hopefully answer some of the most common questions that advisors have.
So I apologize in advance. I'm going to start this show off with a corny little analogy. I don't usually do that, and I wouldn't do it here if I didn't think it illustrated the overall theme of the show so well. So just bear with me for a minute or two. Several years ago, I had the opportunity to travel to Hawaii. And of all the things that I could be excited about for visiting Hawaii and all the beautiful things that you get to see out there, the thing that I was the most excited about was being able to watch the sunset over the ocean. Because being an East Coast guy, you don't get a chance to see the sunset over the ocean. You can see the sunrise over the ocean, but it sets on the other side. So I had never had a chance to do that, and I was really excited about it. So, you know, the first chance I had to do it, I'm sitting out by the beach and I'm all excited, can't wait to watch the sunset. And it was a little bit underwhelming. I mean, it was pretty, and I'm not, you know, trying to take away from it, but I'm used to North Carolina sunsets that take about an hour and they light up the sky as far as you can see, and orange and yellow and blue and purple and every color in the rainbow in the sky at one time as the sun's going down. And I was thinking this is going to be beautiful over the Pacific Ocean. And that's not what I got, because in Hawaii, the sun doesn't light up the sky. It's actually as it goes down over the horizon, it's not much larger to the eye than it is at, you know, middle of the day here in North Carolina when you look up. And the reason for that is Hawaii is closer to the equator. It gets more direct sunlight, so it doesn't pass through as much atmosphere and has less oxygen and nitrogen, all the other things in the atmosphere to bend the light and reflect the light, refract the light, whatever the word is for that. So you don't see this really bright sky light up. Also, it goes by much faster. In North Carolina, sunsets seem to take an hour, and literally in Hawaii, I could, if I paid really close attention, you could visibly see the sun going down. I'm talking like you could literally watch the sun getting smaller and smaller and smaller over the horizon. And from the time the bottom of the sun touched the tip of the horizon to the point where the top of the sun disappeared, probably wasn't 5, 6, 8 minutes. I mean, it was, you blinked, you missed it. So why do I bring that up for this show? Well, because a sunset is obviously sunset's the analogy we use a lot of times for succession planning and the retirement years of an advisor. And just like a literal real life sunset, your sunset as an advisor is going to be very different for one advisor to the next, depending on your perspective. In real life with sunsets, things like your latitude, distance from the equator, time of year, altitude, just light pollution in your area are all going to be things that are going to affect what you see when you see a sunset. And for an advisor who's thinking about retiring or thinking about selling their practice or looking at succession planning options, what that looks like to them, or at least ideally what that's going to look like to them, is going to depend on their perspective as well. So maybe a little bit cheesy, but I feel like it's a really, you know, if you think about, you know, literal earthly terms, I guess I would say there are an infinite number of things that an advisor could potentially say is their ideal outcome, and what that's going to look like is going to depend very much on that advisor and their very unique perspectives. Just like advisors, as we work with our clients, we understand that each client retirement is going to be a little bit unique and a little bit distinctive from other clients, and that's just based on the individual and the experiences. But the same is true for advisors. I've talked to a lot of advisors in the latter 10 years or so of their career looking at their options, and it's all over the board in terms of what they're looking for. Some advisors are, man, they're at the end of the road. They've done as much as they want to do, and they can't wait to get out of here and be able to do something else for a change. And on the opposite end of that spectrum, some advisors would run their practice forever if they could live forever. They'd never want to go anywhere, but they just get to a point where they, you know, realize life's not getting any shorter and they better have a plan in place for what's going to happen to their practice after they're no longer able to serve it. So, and I've seen, you know, everything and everywhere in between on that spectrum as well. So when an advisor starts to think about what succession planning looks like for them, all advisors are gonna, you know, intuitively start asking yourself some questions. What is your role gonna be in this process, right? Are you going to work full-time up to a point in time where you hope to then exit and work zero on the back half of this, do a transaction, move on? Do you want to slowly hand off some of those responsibilities? Do you want to slide your way into retirement, or do you want to just kind of go into the land of semi-retirement and stay there as long as you can, where you still are involved and maybe on the board, so to speak, of your firm, but you're not necessarily active in the day-to-day? Or, you know, do you want to run your firm literally until till the last day of your life? I mean, there are advisors out there who have no plans to retire. They just want to build a team around them that can keep the show going once they have moved on. So your first question is always going to be, what do you see your role being ideally? And that's obviously going to depend on a lot of factors, and there's things that can be going on to help you determine that. But that's going to be one of the factors or one of the ingredients that's going to go into to this recipe, I suppose, of figuring out what the best outcome is going to be for you. Who's going to be taking over? Whether that is instantly you handing off all responsibilities and someone else running the business or taking over your client relationships, or even if it's just you slowly starting to hand off some of those responsibilities, who's going to be doing those responsibilities that you're handing off? And then obviously the big one is going to be, what are your monetization goals out of this? Are you, again, hoping to keep the practice and just hire people to execute the day-to-day operations? Are you going to bring in a partner? Are you going to sell your practice to another firm, to another partner? What does that look like? And then what does that monetization schedule look like? How much of that is going to be guaranteed? How much of it's going to be an equity swap? How much of it's going to be cash? How much of it's going to be long-term payout? How much equity are you going to maintain in the firm long-term? All of these things are going to play into the designing of your ideal scenario. And then a variable that's very closely tied to that is going to be that timeline, because if you are looking to exit very quickly, that's going to affect your monetization plan. And if you're looking to stick around and, you know, maybe continue to be a part of the firm for as long as possible, you may have a minimal monetization or liquidity event, as the term gets thrown around a lot right now. So all of these factors are going to go into this sort of sliding rubric, so to speak, that other firms and other buyers are going to use to determine the value of your practice. And it's also going to play into the same side, a little bit of a sliding rubric on your side as well, to determining what is your ideal outcome and what is it that you're hoping to get out of this. And if you could paint the perfect scenario, what would that look like? When I do sit down with an advisor who's looking to sell their practice, it's pretty common for them to sort of start going through the vitals, so to speak. Just like you go to the doctor and, you know, you immediately start rattling off all the important things that you know the doctor is going to want to know and that they're going to ask you. And I always appreciate that when an advisor dives right in and starts giving me the revenue and their asset mix and all these vital signs, so to speak. But as soon as I can, I kind of pivoted a little bit different direction there. And this seems to be a more effective way for me to kind of start to wrap my hands around the situation, is to just ask the advisor, if you had a complete blank canvas and could draft your own ideal perfect scenario of this is what I want to happen, what would that look like? And honestly, I usually end up learning more and really starting to see what an ideal scenario looks like a lot faster from that part of the conversation than I do the typical vital signs, right? Because a lot of times hearing the advisor put it in their own words puts that unique spin on it, gives it that unique flavor that helps me kind of understand, okay, this is the direction we're going to be going with this. Because the truth of the matter is, I don't think there is a questionnaire or a formula or a spreadsheet or anything along those lines that I could design or anybody could design that would be a one-stop shop. You answer these questions and we'll spit out the perfect scenario, the perfect buyer, the perfect plan. It's not out there, because it's so much of this process is going to be subjective. It's going to be tied to that human emotion and that human personal preference that's going to be involved in it. This is your business. You know, you've probably spent more than half of your life building this thing up. It's probably the crown jewel of your professional career, and it's going to mean a lot to you. And it's also, at the same time, probably the biggest stressor in your life as well for a lot of people. So that tug of war between I love this thing and I want to take care of it for as long as I can to, good Lord, get this thing off of me. There's always that type of balance going on there for advisors at this stage. And that's why you have so many different potential outcomes and different ways that advisors look at it. So I always like to ask that question to just say, okay, forget about what you've read in the Wall Street Journal. Forget about what you saw on CNBC. Forget about what your buddy at the golf course told you or whatever the case may be. Just think about what your ideal scenario looks like. It's your business. You're the one who knows it better than anybody. You know your clients. You know the business metrics. You know the people you have working with you. What is the best way that you see this playing out for all involved? And if you could say, you know, wave a magic wand and this is what my retirement is going to look like, start drafting that up in your head and seeing what it looks like. And from that, you're going to be a lot better positioned to springboard into the conversations that are going to happen next about what your options are, you know, kind of going in armed. Because I think a lot of advisors really don't know what is possible. And advisors may paint that perfect picture in their head of this is what I want it to look like, but they kind of assume that that's not possible. You might be surprised at what's possible, especially nowadays with so many different firms out there offering so many different types of opportunities and support models and equity plans and different agreements. You might be surprised at what you're able to work out if you find the right partner. So go into it hoping for the best. Obviously, be realistic. You're not going to be able to get 5x revenue and then continue to earn 80% of that revenue indefinitely. There are going to have to be some reasonable expectations there. A lot of firms out there are pretty flexible in what they're willing to do and what they're willing to offer and how they're able to accommodate succession opportunities. Take advantage of that and be opportunistic and, you know, go into it with an optimistic mind, and you may be surprised at what you're able to find out. I will say to firms on the other side of this, for this reason, in my experience, the most successful firms in M&A and advisor recruiting and succession opportunities, if you're on the buy side of this equation and you're a firm who is looking to add advisors to your firm through an M&A strategy or a recruiting strategy, flexibility is going to be one of the best friends you can have if you want to be competitive. Now, I know some firms who will come to me and be very direct and very honest and say, nope, this is the one thing I'm looking for. This is the only way I'm willing to accommodate it. I'm not interested in entertaining any other opportunities. And that is totally fine. That's your right as a firm owner to have that strategy. Most of those firms also understand that by being so nailed down to a particular type of opportunity they're looking for, that they're not going to have the quantity of opportunities that other firms might have. But on the flip side of that, the firms who say, I'm looking to buy firms if it's the right fit. I'm looking to find the right types of advisors. As long as they fit the culture, as long as they fit this particular, you know, minimum standard, we're willing to negotiate everything else. I think those end up being the firms that you're seeing do deal after deal after deal, because it's not one size fits all. It's not always going to be the same answer where you've got, you know, the best transition package, or you've got the best payout, or you've got the best transition team, or you've got the best technology. None of these things by themselves are going to win in these succession opportunities, because there are just so many unique subjective factors that are going to be playing through an advisor's mind that your best friend is going to be flexibility and really taking the time to get to know what the motivation is behind the advisor's motives, right? The advisor is going to have an ideal plan. And, you know, the person I was talking to 5 minutes ago in this podcast of what does your perfect scenario look like, they're going to be able to come up with what that perfect scenario looks like, and they may share that with you. But then if you can take that a step further and really drive down to the point of, okay, why is that the outcome that you arrived at as being your plan A? Why not plan B? Why not plan C? What makes this the number one thing that you're looking to accomplish? If you can figure out what's motivating that, and then craft your solution to tailor to those needs, you're going to have a lot better opportunity of winning that business than saying, okay, here's my round hole. How can we fit your square peg into this and maximize my profitability as much as I can on the deal? Because everybody's doing that. If you can go to the round peg and say, okay, let me help you measure up these dimensions and figure out how to carve out a gap here that is going to fit perfectly, and how can we do that in a way that's going to serve you and your clients and your staff as well as possible while still being profitable for the buyer, then you're going to have a lot more opportunities, you're going to have a lot more success, and you're going to grow exponentially faster than some of the competitors out there who are still trying to figure out how to bang those square pegs into the round hole, so to speak. And I will touch on, you know, there are a lot of strategies that can work. And, you know, if you want to sell and walk away in 6 months, we can make that happen. If you want to stick around for 10 more years and peel off a little bit of your business year by year by year, hey, there are buyers out there now that will, you know, not necessarily take it all lot, stock, and barrel in one transaction. They may be willing to take, you know, little bites at a time over a series of transactions, which serves a couple of purposes. It gives you, you know, gives both sides the opportunity to test drive the other a little bit before they go all in, but it also is going to be increasing the value of the partnership over time as it does have success, because you have less friction and less risk of clients not sticking through the transition. If you're flipping a switch and saying, okay, today we're firm A and tomorrow all your, you know, telling all your clients you're going to be clients of firm B and I'm going to be out of the picture, yeah, there's going to be a good opportunity that they're going to leave. But if you're building that relationship slowly over time between A and B, there's a better opportunity for client retention and also a better opportunity for you to put the two minds together and possibly even create an entity that's going to be more valuable than the two were as individuals beforehand. And then that really grows in the value of the transaction overall. So sometimes spreading it out can be a great advantage and can be a great strategy. There are some situations where advisors don't necessarily sell at all. There may be situations where, you know, you're a one or two man RIA and you love being your own RIA. You love having your own brand. You love doing things your way, but you need a continuity plan. You don't want to go away, but you do need to find a successor. And until you find that successor, you need to find someone who can service your clients the right way and keep the game going if something were to happen to you or if you were sick or out for an extended period of time. So there are solutions for that as well, where you don't necessarily have to sell your practice, but you can just plug into the infrastructure that you need. So from one end of the spectrum to the other, there are solutions that are out there, but I will say there is one particular strategy that I see fairly, I see it more often than I think I should. And it makes sense, and I understand why a lot of advisors look for this strategy, but I'm not sure that they've all thought through one particular challenge that comes into this. And that is the firms that say, okay, we're 10 years away from retirement. We want to go find a young advisor and groom them to take over the practice one day, and then we're going to sell the firm to them at some point, you know, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, whenever they're ready. The challenge with that, and this is very intuitive, honestly. I mean, it's pretty commonsensical, really. But I do see this is the primary strategy of a lot of firms. And the challenge with that is you're probably going to have to sacrifice a little bit of the valuation if you're selling to a younger advisor that you've been grooming. Because if you've brought in a $50 million producer who's been making, you know, $300,000 a year on their $50 million book for 10 years, what is it exactly that you're expecting them to have to buy your $200 million book after 10 years? Because they've not been making enough to stockpile the kind of cash that they're going to need to be able to buy this. Yes, there are capital partners out there. There are firms out there who can come in and write a check and help support that deal, whether that be some type of an equity arrangement, some type of a signing or transition bonus, even just some type of a loan, or going to small business banks who can offer loans in these situations. Yes, there are some options that are out there. But make no mistake about it, the young advisor making $250,000 a year is going to find it more challenging to come up with the capital to buy a $200 million book of business than a $400 million business is going to be, or a $1 billion book of business. But the flip side of that, and the reason that advisors don't want to go that route, is they don't want to find a partner that's bigger than them because they want to still be the boss. They want to still be in control. So I would challenge you to really think through that math, because there's nothing wrong with that if you want to groom your successor, let them slowly take over time by selling them 5, 10% of the firm year by year by year while you gradually sunset out. But I have come across this more than a few times, or I wouldn't bring it up in a podcast, where an advisor thinks they're going to go find a junior 33, 35-year-old advisor, groom them for 10 years, pay them $200,000 a year, and then sell their business to them for $5 million. Okay, well, we've kind of skipped a part of the financial planning process there, and we've not done the math to figure out where is the money going to come from for this younger advisor to be able to buy us out in 10 years, unless we're going to take a discount on the valuation itself. So I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not trying to say that this is a strategy that never, ever, ever works. I'm just saying that I see that as the solution a lot of firms have or a lot of advisors have for the succession planning. And then when they go out to try to execute that or find the right buyer, things go sideways. Either they can't find the right buyer, or worse, they find the right buyer and execute everything up until the point of selling the firm. And then how about that? Our successor doesn't have the money to buy it. And now we've got, you know, negotiation problems, and we've got a succession gone sideways, as I like to call it. So that is a challenging approach to take to it. Aside from that one, and even that one can work, I'm not saying it can't, but you're usually going to have to get pretty creative in the math and with the financing to figure out how to make that work. And it's probably going to have to be seller financed, which is totally fine if that's part of your monetization plan. But if your plan is to find a junior advisor, groom them for a decade, and then sell it to them for 4-5 times revenue, not going to happen, at least not unless that advisor's got some money from an outside source. So just food for thought on that one. But wherever you're at in this, whether you're a firm who's looking for these opportunities and you're just curious and maybe want to just play verbal ping pong, so to speak, and let me know what you've been, you know, what your thoughts and approaches are to succession plans, and just kind of hearing what the rest of the market is doing and what options are out there. Be happy to share what I've learned from the other firms and the other advisors that I've worked with. Or if you are an advisor who is trying to draw up your succession plan, or maybe you are you have that blank canvas and you're drawing a blank on what your perfect outcome looks like, or maybe you see a perfect outcome in your head but you're not sure if it's possible, would love to chat with you. Feel free to give me a call. My number's in the description of the podcast or the YouTube video, 919-561-2436. You can also send me an email to garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com, or head over to the Advisor Advocates website. I think it's theadvisoradvocates.com/connect. Brings you to my calendar link. You can schedule a time at your convenience. Shoot me a text, send me a smoke signal, whatever you'd like to do, but feel free to get in touch with me anyway if I can help. Would love to chat with you. I appreciate you listening. Thank you for your time. If you're on YouTube, thanks for watching. Appreciate it. See you next time.